Drivers for the ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft are striking tomorrow over working conditions and wages, and we're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Uber and Lyft are these ride-hailing apps that allow people to order a private or shared car with a few taps of a mobile app, with payment taken automatically from a user's account, and they've been seen as more convenient than hailing a traditional cab. 15 million Uber trips are completed each day with several million Uber drivers worldwide. And its key rival, Lyft, has 1.4 million drivers. Do you drive for Uber, Lyft, or another ride-hailing service? What is that experience like? We're at 800-642-1234. Arun Sundarrajan is a professor at New York University's Stern School of Business. He's the author of The Sharing Economy, The End of Employment and the Rise of Crowd-Based Capitalism. And his research explores how digital technologies impact business, government, and civil society. Arun, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great to be back, Kate.
Well, break this down for us. Why exactly are Lyft and Uber drivers striking tomorrow?
Well, we've had two high-visibility IPOs of the parent companies, Lyft a few weeks ago and Uber on Friday. I think the specter of a number of executives and early investors getting fabulously wealthy is perhaps particularly galling to Uber and Lyft drivers who are not earning a lot of money per hour doing what they're doing. But I also think it's part of a broader conversation about, the growing divide between technology platforms and the millions of people they empower to sort of make a living through the platform. In the 20th century, we created the social safety net across the country, but we did it for one particular arrangement of work, full-time employment. And the kind of work that's being created by the new technology platforms doesn't look like full-time employment. It looks different. And so it frustrates a lot of workers who are looking for the benefits, the security, and the safety and the stability that used to be associated with full-time work. And so I think that's sort of really what's bubbling to the surface here.
Right. Independent contractors are feeling pretty exposed here. What kind of impact could the strike have on these companies? Because these work stoppages, it looks like, are only about 2 hours in major cities. But is that enough to make an impact?
Well, I think the fact that we're speaking about it on your show today is a big part of the impact they were hoping for. It's less about a financial hit that they're trying to induce on the company and more about just simply drawing attention. The trouble is that we're not talking about a situation here where the management is oblivious to the issues that labor is facing and need to be brought to the table. Rather, both Uber and Lyft actively think about how to improve relationships with drivers. It's just that they are also in a situation where they're going public. They're trying to sort of demonstrate that they have a viable business model. And so it's a balancing act for the companies between, sort of making sure that their relationship with drivers is decent and also convincing convincing investors that they can sort of turn profits soon. So will it have an impact? I think it already has. Will it sort of lead to sudden change, a drop in the Uber IPO price? Probably not.
Arun, the drivers union has asked for better job security and a guarantee that drivers receive 80 to 85% of fares. What changes do you think are realistic for the rideshare drivers and what they're asking?
Well, I think we need to sort of separate how much the drivers get paid from the other sources of security and stability. There's generally a feeling that over time, the commission rates that the platforms take, that is for every dollar that you or I spend on an Uber or Lyft, what fraction does the platform keep and how much gets passed through to the driver, that those commission rates will come down to 10 or 15% over time, not because of drivers like, you know, labor activism, but simply because of competition. You know, mm-hmm. the platforms that offer lower commissions will be the ones that attract the drivers. So I believe that that will happen over time. It's not automatically going to raise, like, you know, sort of driver earnings to sort of a really impressive level. I mean, this is fundamentally not a form of work that is going to be extremely lucrative, like, you know, even in the long run. But I think what most drivers seem to want, in addition to sort of better wages, is some feeling of stability. There's something, there's a very contingent feeling about, like, you know, not knowing how much you're going to earn next month, about not being able to afford health insurance, about not being able to take paid vacations. I mean, this is not just Uber and Lyft drivers. I mean, a growing fraction of the workforce is in these work arrangements that don't have this kind of stability and protection. And the answer really isn't going to come from exclusively from the platforms, because we've just got to rethink how we fund this social safety net. You know, when everybody was a full-time employee, it made sense to think about, okay, here's what the employer does, here's what the employee does, here's what the government does. But as we move into a world where more and more people are earning a living in these not quite employment, but sort of dependent on a technology platform relationships, we have to restructure who's responsible for what in funding, like, you know, the stability, the safety, and the predictability that all of us crave.
We're talking with Arun Sundarrajan. He's a professor at New York University's Stern School of Business, and you can join in this conversation. Do you drive for Uber, Lyft, or another ride-hailing service? What is that experience like? Are you satisfied with your wages and hours? What changes would you like to see? And perhaps have you considered organizing? Do you support the efforts of your fellow drivers? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Arun, these sharing economy type companies that you've been talking about, they have been technology disruptors. Companies like Uber have upended the traditional taxi industry. Companies like Airbnb are perhaps threatening the hotel industry. But that has also come at a cost to workers. What does the fact that the gig economy workers are organizing and using their voices, what does that say to you?
I think it's a good sign. I think it's you know, it's coming at a time where labor voice is perhaps sort of at its lowest level of power that it's been in 50 years. Like, these issues have been sort of bubbling beneath the surface for at least a couple of decades. I think Uber, ironically, will perhaps also, when we look back in 10 years, we'll think of them as the company that really brought, like, you know, the 21st century labor law issues to the fore. Because, you know, they're not the first company where, you know, workers have asked to be reclassified as employees rather than independent contractors. Companies ranging from FedEx to even Microsoft have faced these kinds of class action lawsuits. But because it's Uber, we're paying so much more attention. It sort of rallies workers in a way that we haven't seen happen. I do distinguish between Uber and Lyft on the one hand and Airbnb on the other. Because, you know, the nature of the relationship that Airbnb hosts have with Airbnb is pretty different. I mean, you know, the 6 million hosts on Airbnb really are tiny entrepreneurs who are running little businesses through the platform and who, by and large, seem to feel positively about the platform. I think the impact on hotel workers in the long run will be significant, but this sort of underscores the fact that we're looking at entering a new economy where we can't expect that everybody is going to have a full-time job. That's just not the way the economic activity will be organized. And more people will be earning a living through either independent work or running a small business through a platform. And we really just have to step up. And, you know, the federal government has to step up over the next few years, state and local governments, and saying, well, how do we refund the social safety net that we funded using full-time employment in the 20th century?
Arun, is it in the best interest for these drivers to have the company they work for, the app they work for, to go public? Because we saw Lyft went public earlier this year and didn't do so well in trading, looking from March to now. What about going public? Is it in the best interest for drivers?
It depends on the choices that the platform makes after they go public. I think both Uber and Lyft took sort of a small step towards sharing the ownership of the platform with their drivers. They've made token gestures to say that, if you've driven more than 10,000 rides, more than 20,000 rides, here's sort of money to buy shares. Here's a way in which you can also participate in the ownership of the platform. This is not going to result in drivers owning big chunks of the platform, but it's a step forward. I think that's a direction they should pursue aggressively, because the platform that actually decentralizes its ownership more is going to naturally, get more driver hours, get a greater feeling of, sort of belonging and loyalty from the drivers. I know that's a far cry from, the state we are in today where, drivers want to go on strike, and where a majority of the drivers, while they are happy about the fact that they can make a living through these platforms, are not happy about the level of earnings they're getting. If the platforms, after going public, are too sensitive to investor pressures, if they sort of chase after short-term earnings and start to try and cut costs and cut driver earnings in the process, this is not going to be a good thing. If their leaders are strong enough to say, hey, we're playing the long game, we're not after the taxi industry, we're really after trying to get people to stop buying cars and use our service. The way that, I often look at the way Amazon evolved over the last 20 years, Amazon.com, the online retailer.
Yeah.
Because, they had a profitable business selling, books.
And we have to pause right there. Arun Sundararajan, our guide, is a professor at NYU's Stern School of Business, and talking about the ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the ride-hailing apps Uber and Lyft here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and they're considered a disruptive business, have wreaked havoc on the taxi industry in major cities around the world. Now Uber and Lyft drivers are planning a strike tomorrow. Here is YouTube influencer Torsten Kuhnert, who's known as the rideshare professor. He was talking up Milwaukee a few years ago.
If you are thinking of joining Uber in Milwaukee, all I can say is congratulations. It's a fantastic company to work for. They have a lot of market share. They have a lot of drivers. Their cash flow is insane.
But is the cash flow that good as drivers this week strike on wages and working conditions? Do you drive for Uber, Lyft, or another ride-hailing service? What is that experience like? Are you satisfied with your wages, your hours? What changes would you like to see? We're at 800-642-1234. Arun Sundararajan stays with us. He's a professor at New York University's Stern School of Business. Arun, as we were wrapping up there before the break, you were saying how Uber and Lyft really have to look at the long game here. It's not about the immediate going after the taxi industry. It's more of a long-term vision about how we get from point A to point B and whether we even have cars.
Absolutely, Kate. And I was drawing a parallel with how Amazon has, over the last 20 years, gradually changed our shopping behaviors. They started out with books and CDs and DVDs. But Jeff Bezos didn't say, okay, I figured out how to sell these to consumers profitably. Let me sort of, double down on this and focus on earnings. Over the decade or more after Amazon went public, the company continually kept investing in gradually changing our behaviors, gradually getting us comfortable with buying more and more of our stuff through the Amazon platform. Now we buy everything ranging from consumer packaged goods to groceries. And this was the path to them becoming a $1 trillion company. the sort of stomach to face investor pressure to report either poor earnings or losses for over a decade while continually reinvesting in behavior change and growing the business. And this is really what Uber and Lyft need to do. While maintaining a good relationship with their drivers for the next decade, because the driverless cars aren't coming for a while, they also have to, you know, sort of weather this investor pressure and say, well, today, only 1% of U.S. consumer spending on personal transportation flows through Uber and Lyft. A vast majority of the remaining 99% is spent on buying new and used cars and maintaining them. And we've got to go after sort of getting a double-digit percentage of that personal transportation spend. That's what's going to make us the trillion-dollar company.
And so you see them as having a lot more opportunity to expand, and perhaps that's what investors see through this IPO.
Absolutely. But, you know, you've got there are going to be some investors who are saying sort of show me the money, show me that the business model is profitable. Just like they were with Amazon back in the late 90s. And, it's going to be a test of the leadership of both Uber and Lyft as to whether they can sort of push back and say, don't worry about the earnings now, let's focus on the long run. And Lyft has historically had a better relationship with their drivers than Uber. Uber has been trying to improve them over the last 2 years, but you know, it's a complex balancing act for them, where on the one hand, they've got the investors saying, like, you know, can you charge higher commissions? On the other hand, you've got the CEO saying, you know, we want to improve relationships with drivers. And so, you know, it remains to be seen what, you know, where they fall in, you know, sort of making sure that, you know, the people who actually power the profits of the company feel good about the company. And these are the drivers. And I think it's critical for them in the long run. You know, it would be a mistake for them to try and cut driver earnings in order to feed those short-term investor expectations.
Have we seen litigation against these companies in the past, and how are they dealing with that?
There's been a tremendous amount of litigation against these companies. I mean, I think like 5 years in, Google probably had a small legal team and nobody in government relations. Uber, on the other hand, had a massive legal team and probably like 1 in 10 people was working in government relations. And a lot of this has centered around whether like drivers are full-time employees or whether drivers are independent contractors. I think that the company started out by not handling these lawsuits well, but I think they've grown more sophisticated over time. You know, the important thing here is to focus the conversation not on classification, but on the broader issue of saying everybody wants a social safety net. Everybody wants benefits, stability, protection. In the economy of the future, we don't have a funding model for this. And so let's not worry too much about classification. Let's instead come up with a broader way for, like, you know, how much does the platform pay? How much does the government pay? How much does the individual pay in actually funding the safety net that the drivers aspire to? Because, you know, Uber drivers or, you know, other freelance workers don't necessarily want the structure of full-time employment. It's not as if they want to be employees. They want the nice things that go with full-time employment. And if we can sort of pare away some of those nice things and attach them to other work arrangements, we'll have a happier and more productive workforce.
Arun, many people listening might be thinking, well, I don't drive for Uber or Lyft. I don't use these services. Why should I care right now? How would you respond to that?
Well, the rearrangement of work, if it hasn't already come to your industry, is on its way. I think people who work for the hotel industry have certainly started to face the pressure from, you know, the changes caused by Airbnb. Across a range of professional services, lawyers, consultants, accountants, public relations, digital marketing, high-end computer programming, we've seen the emergence of small but successful platform businesses that are allowing individuals to make money sort of running their own tiny business, so to speak. So there's a platform called UpCouncil, for example, that allows you to run your tiny law practice through the platform. But it's not like sort of hanging up a shingle and, you know, waiting for business to come. The platform helps you generate global demand the way Airbnb does for your little sort of bed and breakfast business that you're running through the platform. I fully expect that this model will start to have an impact on healthcare, on energy production in 10 years, on certain sort of slices of manufacturing. So it's certainly not a problem that's just restricted to Uber and Lyft drivers. In many ways, they are the leading indicator of the challenges to the safety net and the challenges to labor law that lie ahead for many of us in the decades to come.
So as we look at the strike as it heads tomorrow and Uber's IPO later this week, what are you going to be watching for in all of this?
Well, one of the things that I'm going to be trying to understand is what is the level of participation of Uber drivers and Lyft drivers in the strike? Because I believe that it's really important for a healthy economy to have strong worker voice. And we had it in the 50s and 60s, but the union model that emerged then hasn't really sort of kept up with the changes in work. You know, and so, you know, I think the organizing of Uber and Lyft workers is, you know, the first significant, you know, emergence of a different sort of worker collective, a worker collective for the 21st century, for the digital economy. But they don't have the kind of power that a traditional union has on its members. And so one of the things I will be watching with the strike is how much participation did they get? How much has this collective convinced its potential members that they do, in fact, represent them? Do they only represent a vocal minority, or do they actually represent sort of like, you know, the broader base of Uber and Lyft drivers?
Arun, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, Kate. I mean, always great to be on your show.
Arun Sundaranjan is a professor at New York University's Stern School of Business. He wrote the book, The Sharing Economy, The End of Employment, and the Rise of Crowd-Based Capitalism. Coming up, a pair of frac sand mining companies in Trempealeau County are being sued by dozens of landowners. We'll look at the conflict after this news update. It's The Morning Show. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.